to say.
Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, we're going to start.
Hello.
Good morning. And thank you for joining me on the Charmaine Show. This is your host, Charmaine, on Blog Talk Radio. I'm so excited to have my guest again today, none other than Dr. Faye Vargas Morris. And I forgot that I heard that the show started, so we were chit-chatting so much. So I'm positive we are live. So once again, let me just say an official welcome to the Charmaine Show on Blog Talk Radio. This is your show, Charmaine. My guest, of course, is Dr. Faye Vargas Morris. And last week we had such an interesting conversation with what we call a taboo subject, where most people do not talk about depression, whether it is in Black communities or any community. There are just certain things that are, it's not even taboo. We make it taboo.
Mm-hmm.
And just a spinoff of last week's engagement, we decided to do a part two, which is a follow-up. So this week, our show is entitled The Silence of Depression and Violence in Black Communities. And, of course, once again, our Dr. Vargas Morris is an internist. She's a medical doctor and co-founder of Atlanta Vanguard Medical Associates. She practices medicine currently in the Atlanta area and, of course, coming from upstate New York and in other areas of the tri-state. She loves music and loves to dance and loves to cook, travel, and exercise. And, of course, as a mother of two boys, you know that spending time with family and especially her boys are very important to her. So let's just go ahead and talk a little bit about silence of depression and violence in Black communities. Welcome, Dr. Morris. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning. Thank you so much for having me on your show again. All right. So I just wanted to give some numbers so that we can start out in terms of what is going on in our community. So this is according to the United States Health and Human Services Office of Minority Health. So I'm going to just throw out some numbers and some statements. They've done studies in the African-American community. So adult African-American 20% more likely to report serious psychological stress than adult whites. Adult poverty are more likely to report stress than those living above poverty. Black Americans are more likely to have feelings of sadness, hopelessness, and worthlessness than are adult whites. And while Black Americans are less likely than white people to die from suicide as teenagers, Black American teenagers are more likely to attempt suicide than white teenagers. So this is the prevalence that we're looking at, and it's really astounding and just to see the numbers that go along with it.
Mm-hmm. That part that just shocked me. The statistics of teenagers or young blacks. Read that part again.
Mm-hmm. So again, while Black Americans are less than likely than their white counterparts to die from suicide as teenagers, Black teenagers are more likely to attempt suicide than the white teenagers, and the numbers are 8.3% versus 6.2%.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that actually, I mean, I'm glad you read the statistics because who would think so, you know?
Right.
Because, and here's the thing, goes back to what we're saying, it is so taboo in Black communities, you don't hear about it.
Now,
we're not talking about the attempts or the suicides, you know, or even the fact that teenagers, are not getting the attention and the help. And
right
now, in a lot of, I'm just really saying in general from observation, and you can probably plug in some statistics during the show or even. We're in our Black communities, there are broken homes, there are single parent families. Those are just staggering statistics to begin mm-hmm. with. And we understand and recognize some of the contributors to depression mm-hmm. in both parents and the children is the lack of that family support or the lack of mm-hmm. attention within the family and violence and domestic violence that either continues to go on or becomes a cause for the breakup of the home. So, yes, right. I definitely consider, you know, one thing would lead to another where Black teenagers are at a higher risk of attempting suicide.
Of attempting suicide. So then piggybacking on the violence, Black Americans mm-hmm. of all ages, they just took them from childhood all the way up to adults, mm-hmm. are more likely to be victims of serious violent crime than non-Hispanic whites, making them more likely to meet the diagnostic criteria for post-traumatic stress disorder. So when we think about post-traumatic stress disorder, we think about, you know, those going out to war and experiencing mm-hmm. combat and so on and so forth, that, you know, even experiencing a violent crime can also be a risk factor for post-traumatic stress disorder as well. So, again, these are staggering numbers mm-hmm. and statements. These are studies that are actually that have been performed by the Office of Health and Human Services of Minority Health. Mm-hmm. So, what should we do? What signs do we look for in mm-hmm. that population, especially if they are victims of violent crime or if they're victims of whether it's verbal or physical abuse? These patients tend to be more silent. They don't talk about their symptoms as much. They, you know, they mm-hmm. lack hope and changes in appetite. They either eat too much or they eat not mm-hmm. at all. They can experience anxiety, agitation, restlessness, feeling of worthlessness or guilt, and that's definitely direct from the abuse that that they're experiencing. Trouble thinking, concentrating, making decisions, remembering things. And so physicians are trained to actually screen patients for domestic violence, whether it's elderly abuse or abuse within the family themselves. So these are mm-hmm. questions that we should be asking as healthcare providers.
Yeah, I mean, I am, you know, I firmly believe that a lot of these symptoms, effects, and triggers do begin, like mm-hmm. you said, at a very, very early age. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about, yeah, we, you know, talk about adults, but adults are children that have grown up, and most
Correct.
Of the things that impact us in our lives impact us at a very young age mm-hmm. because as you grow up as an adult, if something happens to you or if you have some kind of trauma in your life, it is easier or better, or you're at a more mature stage in order to deal mm-hmm. with it better or seek help more.
Correct.
So mm-hmm. when you have a younger, you know, maybe a child of 6, 7, 8 years old or a preteen or a teenager, and they are brought up under these certain circumstances or have had impacts or trauma in their lives, at what point do you think that we as adults or parents need to be able to pay attention? Or is it that we should always be paying attention to some of these risk factors when we notice our children or our patients are not, you know, eating or overeating or you know, drawing to themselves or not? Do they just deal with this depression all the way up through adulthood?
Right.
Because that's
mm-hmm.
what happens most of the time.
Right. So the very first thing within the families is actually to acknowledge that you may have some family members that are mm-hmm. suffering with depression. Once you identify that, again, genetics-wise, mm-hmm. you know, genetics-wise, depression can be seen. So if you have a mother who mm-hmm. who has depression or dad who has depression, you are sort of a little bit more vigilant to the symptoms that you that your child may have. So first things first, recognizing that depression does, if it does exist in your family, that would be the first thing, is that you acknowledge that you do have someone in the family with depression. And so some of this, again, in children, they tend to present a little bit more different. They tend, you know, they either are a little bit more withdrawn. I'm not a pediatrician, but, from the training that I have had, they tend to be a little bit more withdrawn. Their drawings, sometimes you can tell by their drawings when they coloring or anything like that, certain colors that they use may represent that they may be depressed. So always trying to be in tune with your child, you know, getting them to talk to you, maintaining a great parent-child relationship can also help in identifying whether or not your child has depression.
And also not just being able to identify, but to also prevent, because the lack of love, the lack of support, the lack of that parent-child relationship or involvement, and it doesn't mean that, you know, a child is going to get every single thing from one person.
Correct.
Because I don't believe an adult either can get every single thing from one person, be it a spouse or whatever. So making sure that if this child is going through a breakup at school or bullying at school or they're having a hard time in a certain class, these are the kind of attention, you know, just pay attention to what is not making this child happy at this time.
Correct.
And being able to identify and get to the bottom of it. Because I think one of the most important things, like you said, is support, not just of the family, but as a community altogether, the school community, the church community, the home community, and also the family at large. You know, are there any people, and sometimes we all know, you know, who the crazy aunt or crazy uncle was in the family, or, you know, your grandmother said so-and-so or your mom said so-and-so, and it's not taken as seriously because, like you said, it can also be genetic.
Correct. And then, like you said, it's not. It doesn't mean that, you know, if mom has it, automatically either son or daughter is going to have it. Just being cognizant of the fact that there is someone in the family, it just puts you, you're just creating that healthcare profile, understanding, oh, you know, this may be a reason, this may be one of the reasons, but to keep that in the back of the head. And definitely bullying, really come around to you know, defending these kids from bullies, because that can definitely be a trigger for depression as well in our children and teenagers these days.
And I think just even in terms of bullying, I dare say that a bullying situation has two victims as well.
Correct.
Because you have the person that bullies,
the aggressor,
who is also bullying because they're depressed and going through things themselves mentally, emotionally, and also the person being bullied is going through other things as well. So it's very important to identify both of these children and adults. We have adult bullies. You know, you can walk into work and you have the fat shamers, and you know, you can
walk
down the street and you just have you have someone just yelling out something at you and they don't even know who you are, or just standing in line at the supermarket and the person behind you is totally impatient and, you know, says or does things that are, like, obviously, you know, we stand there and say, oh, you know, you're crazy. And but we say those things and don't I realize that, yeah, that person is going through things. And I think that's one of the things that we've got to identify, too, in order to deal with some of these that come across our lives every single day, is also identifying that person may be going through something as well.
Right. And so even though we're taught that sadness is one of the major symptoms that we look for in identifying someone with depression, they can also present, like you said, with lots of anger. And I've had several patients present. They're like, my friends tell me I'm so angry and I'm, you know, short-tempered, just cutting them off, and I get really angry, road rage, and so on and so forth. And once we put them on antidepressants, it's like they come in a totally new person. So not only, you know, not only the sadness, the hopelessness, but again, that goes along more with irritability. That's right. One of the symptoms. Irritability, agitation, restlessness. So that's sort of where that the anger comes in for some of these patients.
Right. And those are, I mean, definitely just eye-opening statistics,
mm-hmm.
because we see this every single day.
Mm-hmm.
We see violence and anger, and we experience that even, you know, when we think, oh, I'm not going to lash out, I'm just going to steam. But
mm-hmm.
at some point, it does boil over. Everything that steams
mm-hmm.
got to pop. So,
right.
You know, from a physician's standpoint, where you look at from that standpoint, I guess we have to begin to figure out on a deeper level and a more consistent level, how do we change behaviors? Because this is what it's all about when we talk about violence and depression, because victims of domestic violence especially suffer mental disorders at a much higher rate.
Correct.
And
mm-hmm.
I know on last week's show, we talked mainly about more women reporting depression. And
that's
this could be one
mm-hmm.
of the reasons that more women report depression or go in, because they're a totally you know, devastated, really going through signs and symptoms and the effects of deep depression and mental illness, and more than men would. But
right.
mm-hmm. also more women tend to be victims of domestic violence. Men are absolutely
mm-hmm.
also, but I think it's an ego thing. They don't really come forward with it. So treatment and therapy solutions, how do we deal with or treat someone who is a victim of domestic violence, for instance, and suffers at a high rate or suffers a mental disorder or depression?
Well, for those patients, we definitely have them do what we call cognitive therapy, which is they sit with a counselor, either a psychologist who's trained in domestic violence, and the talk therapy is one part that's
mm-hmm.
essentially important in helping these patients, these women who are victims of violence, who are victims of abuse. That's
mm-hmm.
very essential, and of course, various medications, because these are years of abuse that we have to address, and
mm-hmm.
so it may take
mm-hmm.
a while to actually help the patient out from the physician standpoint. And of course, socially, you know, just making sure that, you know, you get to a safe haven where
mm-hmm.
you have the support, where they can help you, help you leave your situation and do it in a way that it's safe for you and your children.
Mm-hmm.
We do have tons of safe havens here in Atlanta where women can go and get the help that they need, whether
mm-hmm.
it's in your church. Some of the school communities actually do those as well.
And even, like you said, even with churches, schools, community organizations,
mm-hmm.
Et cetera. But it really also, it's not just that one person, but it's also the family at large. And as we talk about getting that help and the therapy and especially the talk therapy, because
mm-hmm.
for many women and men or families that have domestic abuse as literally the noose around their necks in their families,
mm-hmm.
It goes way, way back. to childhood, and then you have someone in their 30s, 40s, 50s, even 70s, 80s, and they still are victims. You know, whether the perpetrator is still alive and doing those things, or you live with yourself every day. We live with memories every day. I mean, unless you have Alzheimer's, you're going to remember everything. Pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes something's going to come back. So technically, like you said, the therapy, the talk therapy, the support groups for individuals and families, because as we can see, we talked about this on the after show last week, violence, depression is such a silent killer, literally.
Yes.
Because it does destroy families and communities because of so many other things that come out of it, whether it's suicide, whether it's street violence, whether it's gang violence, with their spouses, people, individuals, families. I mean, you have someone who's depressed and get mad, angry, upset at one thing that triggers them, and they go and wipe out an entire family. You know, so we have so many things. So literally, really is the silent physical, emotional, and mental and spiritual killer in our societies, especially in our Black communities. So what would you, sometimes when I talk about certain topics, it's like we're going to have this for a long, 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 long time.
Right.
In amongst us, because we're living human beings. But it doesn't mean that we can't begin to put a voice to it more and more.
Right.
And I think when you put a voice to something, you expose it. And once you expose something, it no longer has a hold on you, or at least the noose is loosened a whole lot more.
Correct.
So once again, we are talking about violence and depression, especially in our Black community. So Dr. Faye Vargas Morris has been my co-host on today's show. And we're going to continue the conversation for a few more minutes, because I want to talk about, let's touch a little bit about how this impacts our communities. What are we seeing in the news and the media? And I know you didn't want to bring this up in light of our but we have to, because in light of what happened around us, we're seeing this. We're seeing the marches. We're seeing the suppression and the anger. We're seeing some violence and seeing the bullying and the abuse on Facebook, in the blogs. You know, people are like, I'm friending you because I didn't know you felt that way, or, you know, so we're really seeing an explosion of bullying amongst each other, because it's the blacks and the whites and the this and the that, and, you know, I mean, teachers are being passed notes, et cetera. So, yes, we are saying it. There's a lot more to it, but depression and anxiety, when it comes to negative emotions being expressed and exposed, it can lead you to where this begins.
Correct.
So your thoughts on that, Dr. Faye? You are the expert. That's why we're coming to you.
Well, with everything that's going on in the news, whether it's recent or even more within the past couple of years, we see what's going on, and it hits us as a community, as a, as an African American community, whether we are poor or on, you know, or in the upper class scale, we see what's going on. And again, this is coming from the Minority Health Office. Despite progress made over the years, this is a direct statement from them. Despite progress made over the years, racism continues to have an impact on the mental health of Black African Americans. Negative stereotypes and attitudes of rejection have decreased, but continue to occur with measurable adverse consequences. This is a direct statement from them. And so
So this is not my opinion. This is a study that they did, and this is what they came up with. And so,
I'm listening to that, and because we have 5 minutes on the show, I want you to read that again, because I want you to sink in, because it really just moves my heart. Like, that's it.
So, again,
let's hear the statement.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, again, even with recent events, or events that have occurred more within like the past 4 or 5 years, despite progress, and this is a direct quote from the mentalhealthamerica.net, despite progress made over the years, racism continues to have an impact on the mental health of Black African Americans. Negative stereotypes and attitudes of rejection have decreased, but they continue to occur with measurable adverse consequences. This is a direct statement.
Yes. And so that's one of the main impacts on mental health among Blacks and in our Black communities. Mm-hmm. It's the stereotypes, the profiling, the
microaggressions.
And all of that. And yes, because if you are led to believe and then believe that you are less than, or if you believe that you're not worthy or good enough, not just because sometimes people hear it in their homes, they feel that way because they're not being attended to, or, you know, different things. And then they go out and they hear it at school, and then they see it in the media, and they're like, yeah, this is true. Yeah. Well, if mom says I'm no good, or, you know, or you're Black, so you have to work 25 million times harder. Oh, this world is not made for you. And then you see it on the news, and then you're like, you're going to be looking for those answers to the statement that you heard at home. So we victimize ourselves, and we get victimized by other races, et cetera. So now we have a double whammy. So when you have that, where do you turn? Because you're hearing at home, you're seeing it on the media, you're having full-on experiences. And I know the other day this triggered you so much as well, because on Delta Airlines, which I fly and probably will continue to fly because I like my sky miles. However, when you have a personal experience, you yourself as a Black Caribbean medical doctor, a young woman who is very well, you know, financially off, you're married with your children, you've got your career, blah, blah, blah. And to see someone who wanted to help someone who was dying on an airplane, but it's like, well, you can't be a doctor, you know?
Yes.
So I know
and
that
it hurts.
Yes.
It hurts. Like, as a physician, you know, people expect physicians to be, oh, you know, they're great, you come and talk to them and stuff, but we're human as well. And so when the young lady came out and expressed her story, it was a whole group of African-American women, minority women, who came to support her, because there's no reason why you get on an airplane and they need help, and you say you're a doctor and they don't believe you. That, you know, it hurts. It really hurts. Yeah. And we take that on as a community.
Exactly. And you would think that as a doctor, medical doctor, or whatever, you're like, okay, I'm more professionally, you know, I could deal with this. But no, it just goes back to your point, or the fact that racism does impact our mental health. It impacts us emotionally. It hurt a whole group of people. You know, people are like, oh, no, let me get out of my real skin here. You know, we're about to show the world something else. But like you said, I mean, the violence, the triggers, the effects of depression, it is silent in many of our cases. And when it blows up, I just want to say, I feel like we could go on and on and on, but I know there's an after show, but we'll talk after they cut us off the air. But Dr. Faye, thank you so much for being my guest. Once again,
thank
this morning on the Farmer Show. It was so interesting.
This is awesome.
I told you, we could have jumped right into it. But I knew we would have gotten it would have gotten quite serious. But thanks for touching on those specific areas so we can begin to explore them.
I know.
Way.
It's kind of difficult, and I'm trying to go like, how do we do this?
I know.
Well, it's not even down
here.
It's all across the country. They're really coming out of the woodworks.
I know, definitely. And it's so funny because, I mean, I know the shows, and they probably have us off the air already. I know we had, I don't know if it was a caller that wanted to, that had a question. Is there someone that has a question? Because I'm looking at my dashboard. It won't be live, but you can ask it, or if you're just listening. Well, Dr. Faye, thanks for joining me on the Charmaine Shaw Blog Talk Radio. This has been fabulous. In case the end of the show was catching all our ramblings. Have a wonderful day, and we'll talk soon. It's time for breakfast
anyway.
All right,
thank you.
All right,
take
care.
Bye.
All right, bye-bye.